Hi, this is Lisa Lane Brown, and welcome to the Courage to Win Coach Power Training Program. And I am so excited about this program tonight because not only are you going to learn how to apply the world's most natural formula for curing fear to any goal that you have, but you're going to learn how to share that gift with other people, help them achieve their goals, and elevate them. And in terms of tonight's logistics, so first of all, we have quite a few people in the program. A lot of them, however, are overseas and are going to be listening to the replay of this program. Some people are going to be muting themselves out tonight. Some will be joining us later. And some people, again, will only be attending some sessions directly and some sessions remotely. So welcome everybody who is here. If you have a lot of noise in the background, if it's possible for you to mute that noise out, that would be much appreciated. Otherwise, not to worry. And in terms of, let's just get the logistics handled. So if you haven't gone to the private members area and gotten your handouts for tonight, you're going to want to do that right away. If you're in front of your computer, please go there now. And what you'll find is if you're on the members area website and you scroll down, you'll get to week one handouts. And you're going to click on that and they'll open up and you can, of course, save those. But you can at least be looking at them this evening, and you will need those to go through this evening. Also, if you need to adjust your telephone in any way, your seating in any way, you just want to get comfortable and be ready to roll. And, of course, you can also take good notes. Even though this will be posted in the members area with a transcript, I do recommend taking notes, and you will need to follow along with some exercises with me. This is very, very important because not only will you be applying tonight's teaching to yourself, you'll be then coaching somebody else in the program as I assign buddies to you. Well, let's get the bad guy notice out of the way as well. This is a legal disclaimer that I just need to mention. I just want you to be clear legally what you can and cannot do with the material in this program. So I'm going to go over it very briefly. Then it is actually posted on the members' website. If you do have questions, I just ask that you email them to me separately, as I'm not a lawyer. But we will certainly answer them. So just first of all, we're going to share proprietary documents and proprietary concepts, intellectual property materials from the Courage to Win that are trademarked, and I'm going to refer to them as blueprints. And here's what completing this program allows you to do. So you can coach other people to achieve their goals, whether you're doing it on a volunteer or paid basis. You can use and share these blueprints with clients, provided that the Courage to Win trademark is visibly displayed on the blueprints. You can share the fact that you've completed this program in your resume, your CV, your website, or other promotional materials. And you can actually sell our information products, the audio CDs, online programs, and DVDs, as an affiliate of our program, which I will explain later on when I talk about marketing yourself if you decide to go ahead with that as a coach. That information will be disclosed when you become an approved affiliate if you decide to do that. You are not authorized to represent these blueprints as your creation, duplicate these blueprints for use as a seminar leader, speaker, facilitator, presenter, or otherwise in a speaking engagement. Present yourself as certified by myself or a subcontractor of Lisa Brown and Associates. Sell or offer Courage to Win information products other than as an approved affiliate, or share these materials with employees, colleagues, and contractors for their personal use in coaching other people. Well, that's out of the way. So I'd like you to refer to your materials. I'm assuming that you have them handy and you are able to refer to them. And we know the program is called The Courage to Win. And if you know me and how I got involved in mental toughness, you know that once upon a time I was an athlete in the Canadian sport of ringette. It's an ice sport similar to hockey with five players a side and a goalie in each net. And I got involved because I really was a mental marshmallow. I had real confidence swings, real problems mentally from a very young age. And I had these massive confidence swings from one week to the next, and I never knew why. And it hurt me all the time. And I had a really traumatic experience at the 91 Nationals where we lost with 1 second left on the clock. And you know how traumatic it is when you work so hard at a goal only to lose at the very end. And we lost with 1 second left. And you know, I'll tell you, losing wasn't the hardest part. We lost 6-5, and you know, as these things go, and a teammate of mine got all five goals. This is very unusual in a team sport, and outwardly, I pretended to be happy for her, but I was not happy for her at all. I said things like, good job, Shauna, way to go. But I was very jealous of her and very much eating my heart out, and I wanted to know, why wasn't I able to be a good leader? You know, there are so many great athletes and so many high achievers in the world. What did I miss out on from a mental toughness point of view? And so, you know, choking and losing aren't the worst parts when we are not able to bring forth our best self. And I made a promise to myself that I would go home and I would figure out what that was. And that was many years ago. And since then, I've been working in private practice as well as in seminars with people, helping them learn what works for them and what doesn't to bring out their very, very best and win. And when I say win, I mean achieve their goals. So if you'll follow along with me on page one of your handouts, module one, tonight's session is very exciting because we develop an extraordinary coaching power first by gaining mastery over ourselves. There's an old adage, who you are is shouting at me so loudly, I cannot hear a word you say. We know that people respond to us instinctively based on our self-esteem and our fundamental character. And the higher our self-esteem and the more we work towards our personal evolution, the more other people will respond to us energetically in a positive way. And this, I think, is one of the great gifts of personal development. And so that's why tonight's session, the first building block in our Coach Power Training Program, is emotional self-mastery. And this is the powerful ability to stay in control and triumph when facing setbacks, loss, disappointment, and challenges. And we know that the people who possess this intangible mental toughness factor know how to start from ground zero and build a lifetime of superior results against all odds, which is the foundation of genuine, lasting confidence. So that is the topic for tonight and the topic for next week. And so in week one, here's what we're going to be up to tonight. You're going to learn the four inner game errors. These are typical mistakes that most people make when trying to eliminate fear and display mental toughness. And you're going to learn what these typical four errors are, and you're going to learn how to overcome them and avoid them, and you're also going to learn how to help other people, because what you will see is that everybody that you're working with and dealing with on a personal and a professional level is also making these four errors, and you'll be able to spot them very quickly, and you'll be able to move people through them. It'll become a second nature to you. Secondly, we're going to reveal the first half, the first 50% roughly, of the world's most natural formula for curing fear, and it's a very effective way to work with any kind of self-doubt or procrastination. And the whole idea, of course, is to restore confidence and motivation. And we're going to learn the first half tonight and the second half next week. Now, a natural byproduct of that and a very exciting byproduct of that is solving the mystery of depression. So virtually every person who seeks out coaching or advice or help or mentorship or counseling, and, you know, virtually every person, full stop, has recurring bouts of mild depression. This is natural. This is common. And I'm going to explain later on in the session why this occurs. But they're actually quite unnecessary, and they're very, very easy to turn around once you spot them and once you understand where they come from. And this is a skill that you're going to learn, and you're going to get very, very quick at it and very productive. And again, you'll be able to share this with other people, and they will be very grateful to you for that. Now, next week, week two, we're on page three now of your handouts, you're going to learn letting go. So often, you know, we have barriers to moving forward, and there's a buildup of emotion in the heart, anger, regret, shame over past failures and dreams that we have let slide, and we need to move forward, and that means releasing you know, what we call emotional clearing and letting them go. So that'll be a key part of next week. We'll touch on it this week, but it'll be more next week. And next week, we're going to move forward with commitment. So what you want to, again, excel at is getting this staunch, unwavering, 100% commitment to a goal. again, you work on it with yourself, you understand what moves you to it, and then you become very, very skilled at helping others. And of course, there is, you know, we know that there's a difference between just writing down a goal and looking at it, and it doesn't move you at all. It's just a sentence on a piece of paper versus inspirational goal setting. You know, you look at it and it just, you get so excited just to see the goal. So that's the difference between a goal that moves you, actually a goal, and just a sentence. And so, again, that will be next week. So that is the component of emotional self-mastery and the blueprints that you'll be looking at. The format, I like to keep things very simple when I'm working with people, and I don't think you need to make things complex. I think the more complex you make them, the tougher it is for everybody to work with you. I don't like that, so I like simplicity. So here's the three-step process we're going to use for every module. Number one, you're going to complete the module yourself as a participant. So you go through this training both as a participant, as in a coach, and a coach. So participant first in every session. After the session, in the next week, you're going to coach a fellow participant using the blueprint that we go over tonight. So in the next 7 days, using the blueprint that I work with you on tonight, you're going to work with a fellow participant in this program, and I will pair you up with somebody, and you will coach that person for about 30 minutes, and then you'll switch, and that partner will coach you. It'll be done over the phone. It'll be very simple and straightforward because you're just going to use this blueprint, and you're going to practice, and it's just a practice session, so just relax. I don't want you worrying about your performance. That is not necessary at all. Really, the way I'd like you to approach it is as though you're talking to a friend, and that's really what you're doing. And good friends have done more for each other than a lot of the therapists in the world. So you really want to think about it like you're talking to a friend, and you're going to be very relaxed. Okay. Third, I'm going to listen to these calls. You're going to record them using this service that we have. The information is at the end of your handouts and on the members' website. And I'm going to listen to your calls, and I'm going to provide coaching to you. And I'm going to help you advance your skills, and you'll find it very, very easy to follow my coaching, and you're going to pick up on this very quickly and easily, okay? So moving down on page 3, we're going to start the actual content now, and I should mention that as we go through, I don't want to slow down too much, so if you have any questions that are, you know, pressing for now, let's just see if you will email them. You can email me to lisa@lisabrown.ca. And I'll just periodically hit send and receive here and see if there's anything that's coming in, because I don't want to be on the line for more than 90 minutes. People have lives and children and jobs, so we do want to be as compact as we can. And I've often found that questions can be very helpful and instructional, but often I can post the answers on the members' website and or take them very quickly. But I'd like to move forward. So at the bottom of 3, why winning matters. A lot of people say, you know, gee, winning sounds like a competitive term, you know, so like beating people, and that sounds very harsh. Well, when I say winning, I just mean fulfilling your desires, getting what you want. And we know the purpose of life is happiness, and this much is clear. And I think a great question, though, is what is the relationship between winning and happiness, and how does winning make us happier? Well, if we define winning as just moving through any problem to fulfill your desire, whether it's in a relationship or career or money, well, that's pretty straightforward, because whatever you want, whatever your current desires are right now, these represent the next stage in your personal evolution. This desire, this goal, is moving you to the next phase of your own development. And that's because to attain the desire, to attain the goal, you actually must become a person worthy of the goal. You know, so to win with money, you need to be a highly competent person of integrity and accountability. To win in career, you must be a highly competent person of integrity and accountability. To win in money, you must transform ideas into the physical realm by serving other people. And to win in relationships, you must genuinely love people, you know, with compassion, with empathy, and with generosity. So this whole concept of goal setting and reaching goals isn't just nice, as in it makes us feel good about ourselves. It actually evolves us. And the opposite of winning is failure. Every time we fail with a person or a goal, we question ourselves. Our self-esteem goes down. We feel bitter and angry, and we distrust people. And over time, it really erodes the personal confidence. And I believe that most human misery, including our epidemic of depression, stems from not realizing our aspirations, our goals, and that we have a lot of suppressed sadness in the heart over relationships that aren't working out and dreams that didn't work out. And this is why winning matters. It is about becoming the kind of person who can succeed in your mission. And our self-esteem and our personal confidence depends on it. And in the end, what we're really seeking is love and self-love. So I'm going to now start a little bit of teaching. But as we go through this, I'm going to ask for a volunteer who would be willing to go through the exercises as somebody to be coached on this call. So if you'd like to be that person, start thinking about it right now. And the reason why I like to have a volunteer is I want you and everyone who is here now and also listening to the replay of this call, I want you to get an opportunity to observe me coaching live. This is very important because you're going to comment on what I do and how I do it, and you're going to draw out the techniques by listening and observing in the mind's eye, imagining how I'm handling this person. So think about whether you would like to be that person. It is incredible to get that kind of value, and I'll just leave that testimonial out there. Okay, bottom of four. So what is the objective of our training? It's obvious. You're going to learn and then teach anyone you want the intangible mental toughness factor for achieving any goal within 30 days. And we said that, again, this is the one thing about high achievers that puts them at the pinnacle of success, is this inner game, this mental toughness, you know, the ability to stay in control no matter what circumstances we are facing. At the bottom of four, I'm going to quickly right now outline the formula for curing fear. It is very, very important that you learn this both intellectually, you know, memorize it, and internalize it in the heart. That, you know, if I woke up at 2 in the morning and asked you what it was, you could say very easily and quickly what it is. So I'm going to review it very quickly, and then over the course of our program together, you're going to apply it, share it, but also learn it from the inside out. And at the end of 8 weeks, you will know it by heart. And in truth, you already know it. All of you have done it. All of you have used it. This is not a surprise. It is something you have done many, many times in your life. I've just put words to things that you've already done. So here are the practices of mental toughness. We're now on page 5 of your handouts. So the first practice is the practice of self-acceptance. And the tagline is diagnose before you prescribe. And this is actually the subject of a special report that I had you read as part of your pre-work for today's session. And in the practice of self-acceptance, what you do is you erase procrastination and demotivation and depression, which essentially are all the same thing. And I'm going to explain more about that. But here's what you do in self-acceptance. The first thing is you face and accept your current situation. You acknowledge it and you face it for what it is. Number two, you listen to your fear and you do what it is asking you to do. This is why we say you diagnose before you prescribe. You listen to what your fear wants you to do, and you do what it is asking you to do. You take action. And number three, you heal yourself of loss. Because otherwise, as you learn in the report, you are unable to take a risk in relationships and in life because you're just terrified of loss. So you get very skilled at healing yourself of loss. So self-acceptance allows you to face fear, listen to it, and heal any loss that you're having. The practice of commitment is the very next step in the formula, and this is where you take action. You become a person of action, and the reason you're able to act instead of stay paralyzed and stuck is because you create hope. Hope is the stuff of champions. Hope energizes you. Hope makes you think you can get what you want. This time, maybe this time, it's going to work out. And how you create hope? You set a learning goal that you know is going to work. You know it's going to work with a person that you're struggling with. You know it's going to work with a goal and allow you to achieve the goal, whereas before you didn't think you could do it. And so you understand that you're going to learn what you need to learn to win. Now, the next step is the practice of competence. The future belongs to the competent. So now you're motivated to act. You have hope. You have defeated fear to this point, but you must take the right actions. Not all actions are created equal, because you want to go back to try to achieve the goal, but you must use proven success principles. You must use principles that have worked in the past on the very same situations, whether, like I said, it's a relationship goal, a career goal, or a money goal. You need proven success principles. And before you get going, you actually figure out what those are. And that's why you notice in the course curriculum, I've included weeks on career goals, money goals, and relationship goals, because we're going to go through these success principles together so that you are very confident that whichever, you know, goal that you set for yourself, you've got the right success principle. And I will make sure that you do. And this is something that, you know, you're going to decide different areas that you're going to specialize in with friends or family or team members at work or kids to work on. But whatever areas that you focus on, you'll want to know those principles as well. There is an educational component to coaching people, and you do educate them, okay? And lastly, of course, the practice of confidence is psyching up for maximum achievement. There are a lot of goals in life that require performance. Even having a conversation, a meeting with one person can be a performance. And so often, you know, there's some pressure and you need to be able to articulate yourself well. If you're an athlete, you need to be able to execute well. There are all kinds of situations that involve actually performing, and there's some psych up involved. We're not going to focus on that a lot in this program. There are some people who have registered for this program who are coaching people in the performing arts and in sports, and I will work with you on this particular issue separately offline, and it is something that we will provide upon request, because there is material available for that. All right, moving forward, page 6. Okay, so we have now set the stage by revealing the formula. You'll notice the one I just revealed is so simple. It is so simple, and yet not common practice, which is why we need to continually educate ourselves and practice it so it is simple and easy to take ourselves through. And what I've designed here, starting on page 6, are the blueprints that you can use with yourself. And again, we're only going through the first half of self-acceptance today, so the first half of the first practice is what we're focusing on today. But I have designed these materials so that literally sitting down and taking yourself through them is going to have a massively positive effect on you and how you feel about any challenge you're working with. And that is why it's so powerful that you use this with other people, and you don't need them to fill it out, although I would recommend it in many cases that you get people to fill these out on paper. I personally have found that journaling is extraordinarily potent. Having said that, you can just do this in conversation. And again, when you coach people, a lot of the times when you coach people, it's literally going to be like talking to a friend. And that's why it is so empowering to have these skills, because a lot of the time when you're working with people, they won't even know they've been coached. All they know is that they came to you, they shared something that was on the mind, and in a few minutes, you have literally lifted their burden away from them. They have found the answer to their own problem, not you. They have empowered themselves, and they go away with an incredible self-esteem boost. So these blueprints are things that aren't just for journaling, although tonight we're going to write them down. They are questions and issues that you're going to address with people on a regular basis. And you're going to do it very casually and in a friendly way. And you're going to find it becomes second nature. And in truth, I think many of you are doing shades of this, having read your bios and read the things that you sent me. Some of you are actively doing a lot of this already. So for you, it's really about tweaking it. So on page 6, the first exercise we have is the first mental toughness blueprint is called your 30-day goal. The most relevant thing you can study is a manuscript that you yourself are. And I want you to select one goal that you would like to achieve over the next 30 days. And I would like you to write it down. So please go ahead and write it down below. I'm going to give you approximately 45 seconds. Please go ahead and write down that 30-day goal. Okay, time. Now we're going to stop and check in, and I'm actually hoping that Dean is on the line. Dean, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Now, Dean, I was hoping that you would volunteer to be our coachee tonight. Would you be up for that?
Yeah, I suppose so. I was hoping you were going to pick somebody else. So.
Well, that's fair. And I'd like you to give it a shot.
Okay.
Okay, good sport. So can you tell me what you wrote down for your 30-day goal?
Okay, Lisa. Well, my 30-day goal, and it may be different than what you're expecting, is I want to springboard my career to the next level in the next 30 days and have a serious – as part of that, I also have a serious career discussion with my supervisor.
Okay, fantastic. And when you say springboard, so when you wrote down the goal that you wrote here on your piece of paper, did you use the word springboard?
Yeah, I did eventually. Yeah, because I was thinking about it today, and probably the apt description of where my career's been at in the last little while is kind of dead in the water. So I wanted something that was positive.
Yeah, so the word springboard felt like energetic to you.
Yeah, yeah.
I agree. I think, it sounds energetic to me. I like it. I would like you to be more, can you give me a vision? What do you want? Like if in the ideal world, what's the
in
position
the ideal
that you
world,
want?
In the ideal world, I want to have the opportunities that I see other people in the organization have. I want to be the one that's traveling around the world, meeting new people, developing relationships with key players in our industry.
Yep.
So it's really kind of going to the next level as being the person that's out front and leading versus behind and supporting and grinding it out.
Kind of like the guy behind the guy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Good. And so is there a specific title that you want in addition to this?
Yeah, I want a director title.
Okay, good. And in terms of, you know, do you want to be supervising a certain number of people, or what would be a natural number of people that you would supervise as a director?
It depends on the position. It could be anything from a few people to a couple hundred.
Okay, so there's a huge range, but there would be a minimum of a few.
Yeah. For me, it would be more, what I had in mind was more a smaller group of specialists.
Okay. And how many people do you supervise now?
No one currently.
Okay. So it would definitely be more of a leadership role just from the point of view of for sure supervising.
Yes.
Good. Okay. And travel, meeting new people. Now, the new people that you'd be meeting, what would be your role when you meet them? What would you want to be doing with the new people?
Well, it would be people outside of the company and other related businesses in our industry, and it would mm-hmm. be developing opportunities, either acquisitions, mergers, new business opportunities.
So sales?
It's
Is there a sales function?
Not so much sales, no. It's more mergers, acquisitions, and new product opportunities.
Okay. Just making a couple of notes on that. Okay. So, you know, when I hear your goal, it actually sounds pretty specific to me. Would you agree?
Yeah.
I mean, my read on this is you have a pretty strong vision of the role itself. It's not ambiguous in your mind. You know, you can see it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can actually visualize it pretty easily, like the day-to-day of it, yes?
Oh, yeah, I can. Now, in my mind, I always don't think it's possible in 30 days. But anyway, yeah.
Okay. Well, hey, that's part of our skepticism in life. We all have some, and that's fair. Okay, I want to pause now, and I want to say that from a coaching point of view, if we put our coaching hats on momentarily here, the first thing that as a coach and when you're coaching people formally or informally that you're going to run into, and I'm sure everybody in this program has noticed and will notice, is it's very, very common to when you talk to people that they're not clear on the goal. In other words, when you ask them to write down a goal or even ask them to describe a goal, it doesn't have to be written down. I mean, you don't have to write down a goal for it to be a goal. A goal can just be something that a person wants. And very often what happens is people write down very, very general things. So it can range from, you know, I want to be recognized by my boss. I want to be more appreciated at work. I want my family to make me feel more loved. Okay? These are very common responses when you talk to people about what they want. And you may not even use the word goal, because often when people come to you for coaching, they'll actually just talk about a problem. So they'll usually frame it in the negative. So they might say, you know, Dean, if it were you, you might say, well, the problem is I'm just getting passed over. You know, and that's just the same way of saying I want to be promoted, but it just framed in what the problem is, which is fine. So when you have your coaching hat on, the first thing that you're listening for is how clear is the vision? And the reason why is that often the problem that the person is experiencing and the challenge that the person is experiencing is they don't know why they're not moving forward with another person or with a group of people or with themselves. And part of the reason they don't know why is they haven't defined the goal clearly enough. So that is the first thing to watch for. You know, so if someone says to you, well, I'm just not getting the respect or the appreciation that I want at work, notice the words respect and appreciation. Those are very, very general words. Now, whoever you're coaching and whoever you're working with, they have an idea in their mind about what that is, but you have no idea as a coach. And so the first place that you'll go is, okay, can you give me an example of how, you know, what would have to happen in order for you to feel really appreciated? What would have to happen in order for you to be really respected? So, you know, Dean, if you said, well, I want to be sent on a conference, I want to be sent on behalf of the company to be the person who discusses mergers and acquisitions. Well, that is a very clear example. So this is something that you'll start noticing when you have conversations with people, is they will very, very often be very vague with you. And so when you ask people to set a goal, in fact, it's very, very common for people to get uncomfortable as soon as you ask them to set a goal. They feel there's a lot of commitment to it. They're worried if they set down a goal that what if it doesn't happen, and there's a concern there. So there's just a lot of risk, you know, in setting a goal. And often what gets people talking is when you ask them to discuss a challenge that they have, and they will find that a much easier assignment. I have asked you to jump to goals because you're in a training program and I'm demanding more of you. But, you know, when you're working with someone, you can just ask them, well, you know, can you describe what are you going through right now? And they will happily tell you. But again, what you'll find is that it is often very, very vague. And so, you know, they'll talk about relationship problems or relationship issues, career problems, money problems, but they don't have a specific goal in mind. All right, moving down to the middle of six. The obstacle that we all have when reaching a goal, of course, is fear. And fear has and always will be the enemy of human achievement. And we know this. This is almost, it's so obvious, it's almost not worth discussing. But I'd like everybody here, I'd like you to, and everybody listening, I'd like you to write down your personal definition of fear. And it doesn't have to be anything technical at all. You know, just please go ahead, and I'm going to give you 45 to 60 seconds to complete that. Please go ahead. And time. Okay, so as we move forward here, we're going to move to page 7. And I'm not sure what everybody wrote down, but I'm going to share 4 things that people often will write in different languages, but, you know, as in different ways of expressing it. But really, I would say fear is 4 things rolled into one. And the first is it's an unpleasant emotion telling you that you have learned helplessness. And I'm going to explain that concept, but, you know, think pessimism when I say learned helplessness. This is the belief that you cannot succeed, you cannot win or achieve your goal right now. So it's an unpleasant emotion letting you that where you feel like you're giving up. Number 2, it's a sophisticated warning system telling you that you have a problem. I want you to think about fear very similarly to physical pain. If you've ever had an illness or broken a bone or had an injury of any kind, of course, you've had some physical pain to accompany it. And if you've had a, you know, longer healing process as well, you know that it's your body's way of telling you to slow down, rest, go to physio, take care of it, whatever you need to do. Emotional pain, fear, is the exact same thing. It is a sophisticated warning system telling you, hey, something's wrong. There's a problem. One of your desires is in jeopardy, and maybe that's in career, and maybe that's in a relationship, or maybe that's in money. And I am a really strong proponent of tuning into that. And this is actually fairly radical. I've had people in my field tell me point blank, and this is a direct quote from another guru in my business who said that he felt that that fear had absolutely no navigational or beneficial value at all. That if it could be abolished, that would be a very, very good thing. I completely disagree. I believe there's a reason why fear has not been bred out of us, and that is because it is our body and our soul's way of telling us when something is wrong. And without it, it'd be very difficult to navigate life. And a corresponding example is there's a disease, and I don't know the name of it, where there's a very small percentage of the population is born and they cannot feel pain. They don't have the capacity to feel physical pain. Their brain is not wired this way. And because of that, they die very, very young. They get sick. They hurt themselves very easily. This is what life would be like for us if we were not able to experience emotional fear. Number 3, fear. I want you to think of fear also as a request for action. As a request for you to solve this life problem that is creating this fear in you, okay? So think about fear as a request. And the next time you're feeling stress or anxious or self-doubt, a great question is, what is my fear asking me to do? What do I need to handle and handle quickly? Great question. What is the request that my soul is screaming at me? Number 4, Fear is also a thermometer that basically is telling you that your awareness of a situation is very low. In other words, you've withdrawn consciousness from a situation, and as a result, you're not doing very well. And so this idea of consciousness, that we're not paying attention to how people are responding to us and how, you know, what's happening with our performance, is very, very, very common, okay? So it's a thermometer telling you that you've withdrawn awareness and you have been looking away from the problem. Good. That four-step description that I just gave is an opportunity for you to revisit fear in your mind and think of it quite differently. Now, if you're wondering, oh gosh, you know, does this mean that we can't just exaggerate fear and make it up and, you know, make mountains out of molehills and catastrophize? Absolutely. Of course, we can make fear worse, and it can be, you know, it can certainly be the product of a dysfunctional way of thinking. However, I have found in most cases, when we're afraid, there's a very good reason for it. Yes, sometimes we make it worse, but in most cases, there is a problem to be solved, and we are far better off tuning in and listening to it than not, okay? So this whole idea that we should manipulate ourselves or try to tell ourselves that fear is false evidence that appears real and it's just the product of some weak, dysfunctional mindset, I do not like that. And I do not, in general, when you're working with other people and they start disclosing worries to you and they start second-guessing themselves, it is usually very counterproductive to start telling them that their fear is silly, that their fear is not warranted, that they shouldn't think that way. In most cases, massive dividends will be paid if you ask them, well, that's interesting. I wonder why you might feel that way. Let's explore that. You get them to go into the fear because very often it's revealing something very, very important about the way they're handling a relationship, the way they're handling a career issue. It's very often quite instructional. And I have found that many, many self-help professionals make the mistake of trying to teach people how to manipulate themselves through affirmations or positive thinking in the opposite direction. And this does not work very well at all. I'm going to come back to this, but enough said. On page 7, we have this concept called learned helplessness. And learned helplessness, essentially, is pessimism. And there was a breakthrough discovery in psychology in the 20th century in which they took three groups of dogs. And the first group of dogs was a control group, so nothing was done with them initially. The second group of dogs was put in a cage where the floor was lined with electric shock. And there was a panel inside the cage that the dogs could use to turn off the shock whenever when they could find it and press their nose to the panel, which, of course, is what they learned how to do because they were getting painfully shocked by the researchers. The third group of dogs was also put in a cage where the floor was lined with electric shock, although in this case there was no panel at all. They could not turn off the shock no matter what they do. Fast forward some time in the study, and they put the first group of dogs in a shuttle box where the first compartment was lined with electric shock and the second compartment was the safe zone. And they shocked the first group of dogs. And, of course, the first group, when they were shocked, jumped over the small barrier into the safe zone. You know, it's a very low barrier, like you or I stepping over a curb. The second group, this is a group that could turn off the shock. They had learned that their actions could make a difference. So when shocked, they looked for the panel. Upon not finding it, they also jumped the low divider into the safe zone. The third group of dogs, this is a group that could not turn off the original shock no matter what they did, even though all they had to do was jump a low divider into the safe zone. Each and every dog turned around, followed its tail, and in most cases laid down where the shock was, where it would be more painful. In fact, the dogs had become so helpless that they had to grab them and pull them over to the safe zone to show them that they could be safe. They had learned to be helpless. And this was a breakthrough discovery in psychology in the 20th century. And what we know is that people, us human beings, we have a tendency to give up very, very quickly in the face of setbacks and obstacles, challenges, and loss. We learn passivity. And we learn beliefs that we cannot win. We're very smart in this way. So on page 7, I've got some various examples, and I want you to turn your attention to page 7 about this, because these are very typical. So your boss ignores your request for help on everything from handling department conflicts to updating standards. So over time, you don't trust him, and you think he's going to ignore you no matter how many times you ask him for help, and you give up, and you do work that he should be doing, reducing your own efficiency. Notice the passivity there. Classic example of learned helplessness. Your dad is married to a new wife, and she's competitive with you for his attention and his love, and you've tried to talk to him about this, you know, trying to let him know that you're feeling left out, and he only gets angry with you. So then you start to accept the idea that you cannot be close to him. Again, notice the giving up response. You're an athlete and you love your sport, but every time you get a bad start, you get down on yourself, think you probably aren't going to win, and you become passive in your play and in your approach and your strategy, which only guarantees a bad performance. You're in a healing profession, and your client won't take your advice about treatment and exercise. You've tried to convince this person to do the program, but it falls on deaf ears, so eventually you just go through the motions. Notice the passivity there. The passion between you and your spouse has kind of fallen off a bit since having kids. You notice you feel a bit numb towards each other, but you're not sure where that's coming from. But rather than drill down and really address it, you just get busy and keep piling more and more things onto your day, and nobody talks about it. You've been passed over for a promotion several times. You get excellent reviews, and you're well-liked, but it's not happening. And eventually you stop asking. Another example. So these are very common examples, and they happen every day. And notice that there is a passivity, a mild depression, a giving up that occurs. And when you're coaching people and when you're coaching yourself, your number one job is to look for learned helplessness, pessimism, giving up, giving in to that fear. Because here's the thing. Usually we're not aware of the fear that is causing us to slowly and imperceptibly back away from what we really want. We're not really in tune with fear. It tends to be something that lives in the background. Sometimes we are. You know, sometimes we're overwhelmed with stress and we have a panic attack and we're very aware of it. Or we're in a relationship and we're completely obsessing. You know, that does happen. But most of the time, it is far more subtle than that. So when you're working with people, what you will find is that they have given up on something very close to the heart, something that is core to who they are as a human being, things that they are very passionate about. But they are not really aware of the giving up, like the dogs. All they know is that they're going through these cycles of mild depression and procrastination and demotivation, and that they're in a bit of a rut maybe, or they're chopping and changing and they're always going after something new because the other one didn't work out, but they're not really aware that that's the reason that they're going off into something new. Or they're kind of seething with resentment and, you know, full of sort of a victim sense, kind of a woe to me scenario. And when they talk about it, you can hear the woe to me. And I don't know if you're listening right now and you're thinking of someone you know and thinking of someone that you'd like to help, but if you are, chances are you can relate to that woe to me concept. Because once you have learned helplessness, you end up in that victim mode, that victim mindset. So on page 8, this is where things get tricky, because often if we're not very self-aware, and when you're working with people, they're not self-aware, you're unaware of the fear. And if you're unaware of the fear, it is very difficult to grasp the extent to which it really is impacting our actions, and in most cases, inaction. So on page 8, we're going to ask some questions. And Dean, you're up. So I'd like you to just, with the goal that we asked you here, just going to ask you some, you know, questions. So what frustrations have you had trying to get the promotion in the past?
Well, I think the frustration is seeing other people, it's sort of being passed by and other people getting promoted. So part of the frustration is in this current role, I've probably had four or five bosses in the last 4 years, and they've all been promoted right on up to VP, and you know, I've done a good job for them, but just nothing ever seems to come my way.
Yes, and so, you know, it really hits home when, you know, people that you're working with very closely are being successful, and you have obviously the technical skills, and you see them, you know, that really must hit home when that happens.
Yeah, it's, and I think you're right. That's why, you know, I decided to take this course, because technically it's fine. It's just, it's got to be on the relationship side that I need to change the way I view work.
I'm wondering, so the frustrations have been other people. Now, the people that have gone to the higher level, the director or VP level, have you openly competed with them for these positions as well?
No, I think I haven't. It's been more of a support. But I just to kind of step back a bit, I mean, a lot of these people were, and I've been with the company quite a while, were mm-hmm. people that I started with at the same time, and they've gone on to much more career success than I have.
Yes, and, you know, it is challenging because there's a natural tendency to compare, right, especially with peers of the same age.
Yeah.
And that is quite natural. So have you actually applied and gone through a process, interview process, and been turned down?
No, not that I can think of.
And have there been opportunities to apply that you have not gone for?
You
where
know,
you could
I
throw your hat in the ring.
Is
and
that the, you know, I kind of hit a plateau where my career was advancing very quickly, and I hit a plateau. And then really the positions that I go to next, there's no, you don't apply for those. Basically, you know, people decide to move you up into those.
Right. Okay. So there, it's not a situation where you could have applied, but just were a little bit passive on the scene.
That's
not that kind of scenario.
It's not that kind of scenario.
Good. So basically, you know, if we had to term a quote, if we had to put in quotes here a failure or a frustration, it has been watching other people primarily.
Yeah, and I think, you know, maybe the failure is not cluing into the game soon enough and doing the things I needed to do to get those promotions.
Good.
You know,
so
I think,
keep going. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I think, you know, I kind of had the mindset, and it just kind of goes, this is probably old school, but very old school. But, you know, if you do a good job and take care of the job you have now, then the promotions will come.
Yes.
And so it was always sort of a receiving rather than going out and getting, and then I see that's just totally wrong.
So this, yeah, so you've really thought through, okay, my philosophy has been, I'm going to really do well with my bailiwick, right? And I'm going to execute on my deliverables and my projects, and that will be seen and recognized.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting because when I hear that, like, to me what you're doing is you're drilling down and thinking about, okay, what is the philosophy that maybe has gotten me where I am right now, right? Like you thought about it.
Yeah.
What's the conclusion or belief that you have about yourself that says, hey, this is the reason I am where I am?
Yeah, that's a tough one.
Like when you say I'm not playing the game, what's the game?
I think the game is to build the support and the relationships in the organization so that when these good opportunities come up, they've got the people in the room where the decisions are being made so that
good.
They get that opportunity.
Good. So that, hey, when the meeting's going down, you've got people in the room that are voting for you and pushing you as, hey, he's the guy.
Right.
Good. And who specifically, like, give me, you know, I don't want names, but what positions are most influential?
Well, they would be vice presidents.
Yep. So building a support network of vice presidents, this is something
Mm-hmm.
that you don't feel that you've done that you could have done more of.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Good. Okay, so why? Let me ask you this. What is your explanation to yourself about why you haven't done that?
You know, I think it's barriers I put up for myself
Okay.
around lack of self-confidence or some issues that have happened in the past that had some personal issues that sort of dripped over into business issues, and I think that really impacted my self-confidence
Can
in
you
this
give me an
area.
example of one that really stands out in the mind, in your mind?
Boy, this is getting pretty personal. I guess I went through a messy divorce, and my ex basically said I was having an affair with a subordinate of mine, which wasn't true, but she brought it to my boss, and there was an investigation, and that was disproved. There was no affair.
This
And
must have been completely traumatic for you.
oh, it was completely traumatic. And then she could continue to stalk this person, so my company had to take out a restraining order to kind of keep her away from her. So I think I just that completely threw me off balance, and I think ever since I've just been kind of reeling.
You know, I'm thinking about what it would be like to be in your situation, you know, someone who's clearly super competent, clearly super likable, having a personal issue come into your company like this and overshadow all of the good work that you've done. You know, I'm thinking about what it would be like to be in your shoes and feel like all of your accomplishments, right, and
Right.
all of your progress feels like it's been overshadowed by this one event.
Yeah, you know, it was pretty tough, and you know, I had quite a few reports at the time, and I was the one that was out there meeting service providers and doing what I wanted to do, and
Yes.
it's just ever since then, like I don't have any direct reports today.
How did you feel at the time knowing that everybody knew about this, you know, feeling like all my dirty laundry is out in public, right? And feeling like the scrutiny was on you. What were some of the feelings that you had at the time?
Oh, I felt totally embarrassed, totally sort of exposed.
And I would imagine some of those are still there.
Well, yeah, actually, now that we talk about it. Yeah, I can certainly feel it. You
Sure.
know, and really, at the time, I should have left. And that's the other thing I look back at, and I go, you know, it definitely impacted me. I really should have left the company and gone somewhere else. I might have been better off. I
So,
didn't.
some regret there, too, like shame and regret
Yeah.
are different, right? Like shame is kind of the opposite of pride, and regret is just, gee, I wish I had done something else.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, just as an aside, from a coaching point of view, it's very important when you're working with anyone to identify regret, because I have found that regret is probably the human emotion that we struggle with the most to admit that we have. And it's also the number one emotion that holds us back from moving forward, as long as we're not acknowledging it and, you know, healing it directly and making a conscious effort to heal it. Because it is so hard, it is so hard to recognize regret. Like, I wish I had done something differently. And I have clients all the time, you know, the biggest quote I get from clients is, well, I don't have any regrets. You know, everyone's always telling me how they have no regrets in life. I always have to smile when I hear that, because how is that possible? I got lots of regrets, you know. Regret is part of life. And so one of the things to watch for when you're working with people is they will often talk about things but not realize, hey, there is some regret there. And I have found that if you just touch the regret emotionally, and as in, you know, allow yourself to acknowledge the regret, it will often heal itself and dissolve quite quickly. But it is very difficult to touch it, because we are all so conditioned that we're not supposed to have any regrets, and regret is terrible. It really isn't that bad. And I'd like, you know, I'd like everyone to reconsider your attitude towards regret. It really is just part of the human experience. I'm wondering, Dean, what is the conclusion that you drew about yourself about why this event happened to you and not anybody else? As in, you know, you're the one who had the dirty laundry come in from your personal life. What was the conclusion you drew about yourself?
The conclusion in some of this, I'm just thinking off the top of my head, is just that I didn't manage the relationships with my ex. I mean, I guess that really we're going through a divorce, so obviously I wasn't managing that relationship very well. So just I think the conclusion was just not dealing properly with the issues that were coming up, and then it just ended up blowing up on me.
Okay, so I'm going to reveal something here that I think is potentially, I want you to consider it as a possibility. So you remember how you said to me, I believe that if I look out for my bailiwick and do a really good job, then I will be promoted. That's actually, I don't know if you're aware of this in self-help, but there's something called the law of promotion, which is if you look after your own backyard really well and do well with what you've given, then you'll be given more. That's actually really, it's a very powerful concept, and it's very true that if you, you know, if you do really well with what you've been given, you will be given more. I mean, a good example is when you're supervising somebody at work and they're always asking you for the fancy stuff. They want to be promoted to more advanced responsibilities, but they're not even executing well in the ones they've got. And they tell you that they're bored with the ones that they have, and that's why they're not doing well, and they want you to give them something more challenging. And, of course, if you're supervising them, what you're thinking is, well, I can't give you something more complicated. You can't even handle what you're doing. And so this law of promotion that you've talked about is a very powerful law, and I don't think it's a mistake at all to believe that. I think it's a powerful thing that we need to all buy into, but I want you to pay attention that the first thing you told me was, I believe in the law of promotion. I believe that if I handle what I'm doing, I'm going to be given more. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, the conclusion you drew is, I'm not managing my own relationship very well because it's blowing up in the company. It's blowing up all over the place, right? Or you thought,
right.
I mean, it wasn't, but it felt like it because of all the scrutiny. Well, now you're not managing anybody.
Yeah.
So do you see that? Are you connecting the dots for me here?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So the implication is, well, I didn't manage this one, therefore I don't deserve and I don't want anymore to manage.
Hmm. Case, I need a little bit of help here. So
yep.
Is it something that I'm thinking about myself internally, or is it something that's the impression externally about me from within the company?
Something you're thinking about yourself.
Yeah, no, that's definitely a thought I've had, for sure.
Yeah, I don't believe that's the impression that you're giving off. I don't know, but I can tell you that if that's what you believe, it might even be I'm scared to take on new people because I don't want the trauma of, if I don't feel confident that I can bring something to, look, if the person that I was closest to and the person that I loved most in the world and vice versa can go this sideways, what about someone I don't know that well? Just an employee.
Yeah, no, I think, well, I don't think consciously I'm thinking that, but yeah, maybe.
I'm not saying it's the truth. I'm saying take a look.
Yeah.
Think about it. And a corollary example, and this is something that when we're coaching other people, this is something to understand, is that when you're dealing with anyone in a coaching capacity. And, you know, eventually what's going to come up is whenever people have a fear, it can always be traced back in many cases. In many cases, it'll be traced back to a significant relationship in their lives. And let's just, for the sake of argument, talk about parents or caregivers. So often when a person is struggling in any relationship or situation, you know, you can, let's, mommy or daddy, for lack of a better way of putting it, will often be a challenge. And here's how it goes. If mommy or daddy didn't love me and treat me, cherish me, experience me as a source of pure delight, experience me as so wonderful, if they didn't love me, and they're supposed to, because you're programmed to fall in love with your infant, you're programmed to fall in love with your children, and they're programmed to fall in love with you. If they didn't fall in love with me, well, who's going to? And who will? This is the logic that we work with. And so this is why it's very easy to get into trouble later on in life if, you know, there's any challenges in the background. So the reason I brought this up, Dean, that has nothing to do with you. I'm not talking about your life in this way. What I'm saying is often when we have trouble with core relationships, it is very difficult for us to get really motivated and move on to other relations, you know, more responsibility, grow things out, expand, you know, start touching a lot of lives. Because if it's not going well with the close people, it's difficult to get pumped up about other people. You got to feel like you're handling the close people well before you're going to reach out and expand your network.
Yeah, it's almost like having the right foundation, I guess.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, if you can't pay for your own mortgage, you're not going to go out and start trying to buy up other properties. It doesn't make any sense in your head. That does make you just. So I'm not, and here's key. The conclusions that we draw in most cases are only partially, they only have a nugget of truth. So that, I mean, we relate to them like they're the truth, but it's important to start separating that fact from fiction. And that's part of why when we coach people and we coach ourselves, you know, coaching ourselves requires a tremendous objectivity, because I asked you what conclusions you drew. And we're not going to go on, but we could go on about, well, why did you draw the conclusion that you weren't the one who managed that relationship? Well, you know, we could go on and on, right?
Right.
But yeah. For you, the key is to sit down and say, okay, well, how much truth is there? Well, probably there are things you manage really well, and there are things in the relationship you didn't manage so well, I'm guessing. But it's really important to write those down on paper where you can see them. So let me ask you this on page 8. The experience of watching other people be promoted, how has this created pessimism in you?
You know, I think, at first I was, you know, extremely happy for the people that I knew and kind of worked with for a lot of years, and happy for them to see them succeed, and I thought that was great. I think the pessimism just sort of crept in slowly as opportunities came up, and I wasn't the one that had the high-profile opportunity.
Yeah, so kind of very gradual.
Yeah, very gradual. And then eventually, I guess, you know, along with that, just kind of you get in sort of a creeping self-doubt.
Yes. And how is that? Have you become passive in any way, or could you identify any passiveness in yourself as a result?
Yeah, you know, I think that's, you know, kind of looking back, I think, I should have been more vocal about.
Go ahead. What do you mean?
Well, more vocal about when I didn't get an opportunity. I should have been, hey, you know, how come I didn't get that? Help me understand that. And,
yeah.
I don't think
did you ask?
Sometimes, but I think, you know, most of the times I just, you kind of go through the analysis and go, okay, why did that person get it? Well, I can kind of understand that. And, I think not enough for sure.
Good, good. So this is, again, when I talked about the practice of self-acceptance and I talked about diagnosing, what is your fear asking you to do? If we go back to that point, your
Yeah.
fear is asking you to go and get that information. That's what it's asking you to do.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah. And you need it. And here's the key. You don't need to be afraid of whatever you're told, because either it's true, whatever these other VPs tell you about yourself and the way you're being, and remember, hey, whatever they tell you, it's just a perception. Now you still have to deal with that perception because you're kind of stuck with it right now,
Yeah.
but it's just their perception, and go and get it. And look, either A, it's true what they tell you, and if it's true, you can change. If there's something negative lurking in the background, if the word on the street about you is, I don't know what it is, but if there's a negative word on the street about you, which I highly doubt, but if there is, go find out that perception. And if it's true, if you believe that there's a kernel of truth to it, you can change it, and you can actively tell them you're changing it and you're working on it. Declare it, hey, I'm going to do a better job. Will you mentor me? I'm going to change it. And if it's not true, you can still work with changing the perception. It'll be a little easier because it's not true, but you're still going to take on the campaign of, hey, I'm going to change that perception. And here's my plan for doing it.
Great.
So you don't need to be afraid of anything you hear because you can change any perception out there.
I'll let you know how it goes.
Okay. And you're just listening to you. I mean, one of the things you need to know, on this call is you're coming across, you're very, very, you come across as very impressive and extremely persuasive and very likable. These are very good things. And
Thank
yeah,
you.
and sometimes it's easy to forget your own strengths. So that's what your fear is asking you to do, and I can tell you're on the case.
I am, for sure.
Okay. Good. Well, on page, so page 8, these are the questions that we just went through, which are, talking about, hey, what's happened about that goal in the past? What conclusions did you draw? And remember, just because we draw conclusions doesn't mean they're true. It means we have to check what is there an element of truth? Why did we think that? Step back, be objective, ask the person, well, okay, is there an element of truth to that? If it is true, well, can we change it? If it's not true, how can we deal? How have you been passive? When you're working with someone, you'll find that they have been passive, they have stepped back from the goal. And identifying exactly in what ways they were is very, very critical because it's exciting when you realize, I really haven't done much lately. I could do a lot. That's an exciting moment, right? And so that's page 8, and that's a very, very important blueprint to go through with somebody. And they can write it down, or you can casually chat with them about it. This is very, very powerful at work when you're supervising people and talking to them at any point. No, you don't have to be supervising, you can just be working with them in any capacity, asking them why they didn't do something, what they thought was going to happen, how they've been passive, very, very effective. On page 9, just as a couple of aside, so learned helplessness obviously creates fear. They come together. When we decide, when we develop a belief that we cannot get what we want, we immediately become afraid, we become angry, we become disappointed, grief. All of these feelings are the same feeling, which is, hey, I want something, but I don't think I can get it. And you need to understand that this is the cause of most of these negative emotions, because when we get emotional, we become very confused and very discombobulated, and like, why do I feel this way? And what's wrong with me? And why am I getting depressed? And because you want something, but somewhere, somehow, you decided it wasn't possible to get it. And earlier I said, you know, it's very important to solve the mystery of depression. The moment you find yourself feeling blah and demotivated, and I don't want to do that, and I want to sit on the couch, and I don't want to go work out, and, you know, most of the time when you lose momentum in any in life and you get up in the day and, you know, the colors aren't bright and things are, it's because something is feeling unattainable. It might be getting a certain something from your relationship. You know, maybe your spouse isn't listening to you and you like to chat and you're a chatty person and you love it when your spouse is hanging off every word and that's not happening. You know, you haven't given up on the whole relationship. You've just given up on getting that. That's depressing. You know, your kids won't do something. Somebody on your team, right, calls in sick twice a week. You know, that doesn't matter. The point is that it only takes one thing to start taking your edge off if it's something that's important to you and you're passionate about, okay? And I'm going to close with a very important concept here because I've covered a lot and I've thrown a lot of content at you, but this is very important, and this is the four typical reactions, because as soon as we have this giving up, this learned helplessness, this pessimism, virtually everybody who socializes in Western culture has the same four inner game internal mistakes going on as a fundamental reaction. And the first is self-pity. This is we protest. I shouldn't have to deal with this problem. I should not have to feel depressed. I should not have to deal with the way this person's treating me. It's not fair that this is happening to me. My boss shouldn't treat me this way. I should have been promoted by now. I should be getting much better treatment. This is the very first stage of a problem. Everybody goes through it. It's totally natural, but we need to know about it in order to move past it. So self-pity. Number two, suppression, emotional suppression. And you learned about this in my special report. This is where we pretend that we don't have a fear. We stuff down all of our self-doubt and all of our anxiety, and we just soldier on, and we get this stiff upper lip, and I'm not afraid, and, you know, hear no evil, see no evil. We just get busy. We overshop, we overdrink, we overeat, and we decide, you know, we're mentally tough, you know, and this is just a way of trying to keep fear at bay and not acknowledge a problem. Disowning desires. This is, I don't care about him. I don't care what she thinks of me. You know, I don't care what the boss thinks. I'm just going to email her. And then it's email haven, you know. John Molo, the professional musician, has a great story where he says, if, you know, every time I audition a guy for the band, as soon as he doesn't get it, he starts with, well, the money was crappy and it wasn't a very good gig. And he says, I just want to stop a guy and say, you just didn't play well enough. Because, you know, 2 seconds after he didn't get the job, he's talking about how he never wanted the job anyway. This is where you pretend you didn't really want something that you really do, and you disown what you want, and it happens most often with relationships. He didn't call, but, you know, I just don't think he's the guy for me anyway. You just try to talk yourself out of it, okay? And lastly, reaction to pessimism and learned helplessness is pride, where you say, I got this, I don't need any help, I don't need to talk to people, I don't need a coach, I don't need a mentor, I don't need a book, I got it. When the truth is, you don't have it, you're struggling, it's not going well, it's very upsetting to you, and you don't need to pretend you're alone on this, but you are, because you want to look good, and you don't want to admit you've got a challenge on your hands. So I'm going to have all of you, everybody listening, to write down on page 10. First of all, quickly here, I'm going to have you write down, how have you been telling yourself you shouldn't have this problem or don't deserve these results? You know, for example, Dad shouldn't treat me this way. So I want you to write that down. What have you been telling yourself? It's a protest. Shouldn't be happening to me. Take about 15 seconds and write that down now. Good. Now, suppression. How have you been avoiding any fear or self-doubt? So, have you just been telling yourself not to think about it? Have you been getting overly busy in some way? Have you been indulging in food or alcohol or cleaning or anything just to busy yourself? How have you just been shutting off, and not just fear, but Dean talked about shame and regret, in which we all have these feelings. How have you been just pushing all that aside and soldiering on? So please go ahead, take about 15 seconds and write that down. Good. Now the third is, again, how have you been disowning what you really want with respect to this goal? Telling yourself you don't care that much, it's not a big deal to me, I can do without, just what have you been telling yourself to try to prevent any disappointment? Or you think it will prevent disappointment. It doesn't work, but you think it might. Please go ahead. And the last question is, now, have you asked anybody for help? If so, write down the name or names of those people. And if not, write down why or why not. Please go ahead. Good. Now bring that to a close. And what you're probably noticing is that very likely, if you're like most people, minimally, you have one major area of reaction. One of these four things is really strong in you. Probably all four are going on to some extent. And here's the key point. These four reactions dramatically deepen pessimism and learned helplessness and fear. It's the reactions and not the event itself, as in the past failure, the past situation, is not the determining factor, but rather how often and how frequently and how deeply you're having these reactions. And I can tell you this because when I first started working with people in a coaching capacity, it took many, many years before I recognized this, but I started to grasp that every person that I worked with, and I've worked with conservatively 7,000 people now over the course of the last 16 years, every single person who was able to move through pessimism and learned helplessness and fear and conquer their challenge got over these four reactions. In other words, reverse them and stop feeling sorry for themselves, touched and dealt with and healed their fear, embraced and reconnected with what they wanted and their desire and said, hey, I want that and I'm making myself vulnerable and I'm going to take a chance and went and got help. And everybody who didn't, everybody who stayed in these four fundamental mental errors, did not overcome their fear and their learned helplessness and did not win. And that's how the courage to win actually started, because I started to realize maybe it's not the problem that the person is dealing with that is the issue, but it's these four mental reactions to the problem and the corresponding learned helplessness. Because whenever we have a problem, we always have learned helplessness. That's a given. Otherwise, it's not a problem. We have hope. We are motivated. We know what we're doing. So I started to grasp that these four reactions are the problem. And the reason they're a problem is we've been heavily, heavily, heavily socialized to have them. And so it's not that we're mental marshmallows. It's not that we have weak minds. It's that our society promotes these ideas. We promote lack of responsibility and self-pity. We promote stiff upper lip. We promote, hey, don't let yourself be disappointed. That's terrible. Just pretend you don't want it and want something new. We promote independence. Don't ask for help. Figure it out on your own. That's weakness. These are all ideas that are very, very much championed in our culture. And so I started to grasp that when people told me that their mental game was working and they were winning, they got rid of these initial impulses, and we worked together to move them through the learned helplessness based on that. So these four reactions are very, very important. And when you're working with other people, you want to learn to start spotting them very quickly and helping people recognize their own patterns in these four reactions. We have a question that's come in over email. Kathy sent in a question, and it's an excellent question. And she said, can you experience winning in one area of your life and significant learned helplessness in another area? Or do you think our lives and our performance is all connected? My answer is, it depends. I think you can absolutely win in one area and still have learned helplessness in another. What I will say is that we tend to have beliefs that are very global. So let's say, for example, earlier I mentioned the idea that if we have a negative experience with a parent or a caregiver where that person is not very, doesn't meet our needs, and you know, we don't feel loved in various ways, which is very common, we'll often adopt this idea, well, if mom or dad doesn't cherish me, well, who's going to? That will tend to be a wound, and that wound will tend to be easily scratched. So relationships, whether they be friendships or family or romantic involvements, will tend to be a little more vulnerable than, say, maybe beliefs that you have about yourself at work. Because if there's a wound there, it's more likely to be scratched. If you flip side it and you say, if you have a belief of, gee, I'm not very capable, and you know that's a wound that you have based on previous learned helplessness, previous beliefs, trauma, events that have occurred, then you'll tend to be vulnerable with anything involving getting things done. But your relationships might be fine. You might be rock solid and there's no wound there. Okay? So can you have, yes, you can certainly have learned helplessness in one area, and it does not have to touch others at all. It tends, though, to be more belief-driven, and beliefs tend to be often a little more global, but not necessarily. And it can be very narrow. It can be extremely narrow, actually. So it really is situation-dependent, and I hope that helps. Kathy, if you're on the line, do you have any questions there?
No, that's great. Thanks.
Okay, wonderful. Good. So still taking questions at lisa@lisabrown.ca if anybody wants to send in some more. Okay, so looks like Kathy has another one. Good, very good. Okay. So page 11, we're going to go over the assignments here. And here's your week one assignments. If you have not already done so, I want you to complete the exercises in my special report, 7 Days to Breakthrough Confidence, and they're on pages 9, 12, 13, and 14. They're very easy, and then submit them to me. Number two, I want you to listen to the audio of this call, and I want you to focus on the techniques that I used in this blueprint. And the key, of course, is the stretch that where I worked with Dean directly. And what you're going to find is that I really did only use three techniques. So I'm not going to tell you what they were today because it's your job to listen and identify them. There are only three. And these are techniques that you use every day in conversation all day long. And you will recognize them if you're looking for them in that conversation that Dean and I had. Make notes on the specifics. What were the three? What did I do that was effective? And why was it effective in your opinion? And I want you to submit your responses to me at lisa@lisabrown.ca. It's a very, very easy assignment. And number four, I'm going to pair everybody up in this program with another participant. And it's going to be completely random pairings. Actually, it won't be completely random. I'll try to see if I can match people with similar types of stages in life and similar challenges if I can. And I'm going to send you over the contact information for your coaching partner for this week. And I want you to arrange a call with that person over the next 7 days. And all I'm going to have you do is go through the same questions and exercises as we just went through on this handout. That's all. So it's going to start with a blueprint on what is your goal, okay? And you're just going to go, you know, essentially, you're not going to teach. You don't teach the program the way I've done. That's not necessary. You're just going to ask have the person write down the answers to the questions and then tell you what he or she wrote. And when you hear that person's answers, if you have questions that you'd like to ask the person about the answers, if you have comments, you know, you can use some of the techniques that I did. So you're just going to practice. Just by giving them little assignments, then listening to what they say. Don't be afraid of deviating from, you know, the script that I did today, because every person is different. Don't be afraid to ask questions. It's all voluntary. So if you don't want to answer a question that somebody asks you, that's okay. You can decline to answer it. It's totally up to you. Okay. And you know, this is your time with that person to do with what you want. And remember, you're just practicing. This is not life or death. Nobody's watching, you're not being judged, you're not being graded, this is very casual and you're just practicing. Now, once you've done, one person has worked with another person for 30 minutes, you're going to switch and then you become the coachee if you were the coach and vice versa. Make sure that the conference call instructions are also here on page 11, that you record the call and then I can go in and review it and provide you with feedback on your coaching skills. Now, a fifth assignment, which is not here, but it certainly is optional, is you can take this material and you can go and practice on somebody you know, okay? So if you really don't want to participate with a coach, another person in the program, and for whatever reason, and you have your own reasons, you don't want to do that, just let me know. Just email me and say, I don't want to be paired up with somebody, okay? You can go and practice with somebody else. You can practice with a friend or a spouse or anybody you want. That's totally up to you. I would like you to practice. It's extremely valuable. It's very, very easy. And the upside is that the people that you practice with will be very happy that you spent the time with them. They'll be very grateful to you, and you will help them tremendously. And do not underemphasize the importance of the healing energy that you're providing, of the support that you're providing, of the insight that you're going to provide them. You are changing their lives. You need to understand that. Do not be shy about going out and doing this. More people need to step up and be support to people in this way. And it is so important that you're doing this because you're here for a reason and you need to, you know, take control and be that person for the people around you, and they want you to do it. So that's my commercial for getting involved. And enough said. I'm just going to check my email one last time for any questions. Looks like we're good. I'm going to just pause here and say, does anybody have any questions before we conclude the night? All right, that sounds like a no. Thank you very much for attending, and this will be posted in your members area. Fortunately, we were able to keep it to 90 minutes. That's fantastic. Have a great week, everybody, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.